Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
You will know trouble, Lord, you know.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne here till 12 o'clock. The former great writer with the Post-Dispatch, Dan O'Neill, who's written a terrific book about the St. Louis baseball Cardinals, is with us this hour. Dan, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Frank, I like to think of myself as still a great writer, but former, I guess, is okay.
No, I'm just happy to be
in the layup line here with you guys. You know,
like a Marine, an Olympian, once a great writer,
well,
always
like
a great
saying,
writer.
You know, it's a pet peeve with me, but people always use, and nothing wrong with it, but they use the expression, you know, like Brooks Koepka will try to defend his U.S. Open champ. You don't defend it. You're always, you know, if you won the U.S. Open in 2016, you're always going to be the 2016 U.S. Open winner. So you're not really, you don't defend, the Blues won't defend the Stanley Cup next year. They will always be the Stanley Cup winners.
Well, that's a great point. In fact, Bruce Jenner once corrected me on a live shot, and I'm calling him Bruce because that's who he was at the time. And I said, and we are joined by the former gold medalist, Bruce Jenner. And he interrupted me right away. No, I am still a gold medalist, Frank. And he could have been nicer and fun.
So, yeah, but he's not still Bruce Jenner. Right. So you were.
Yeah, I'm joined by formerly.
Yeah, you weren't totally
not
off
the
base.
Former Olympic champion, but the former Bruce Jenner joins us now.
What a
world we live in where you have to explain why you called him Bruce.
Did you ever interview him?
No. Bruce Jenner, no. Or
Caitlin?
Caitlin, no. Neither.
So we have Brooks Koepka, Bruce Jenner, Brooks Koepka, and Dan O'Neill in the same sentence. I didn't think this was happening.
I've heard they're two of the best interviews in the business.
Dan, much to discuss with you. Before we get to the book, what was your take on Wednesday at 3:01 when it became official the Cardinals had not improved their Major League roster at all?
Well, you know, Frank, I'm the voice of reason, really, in St. Louis. So I wasn't surprised, really. I mean, if you go back, it's kind of become a thing with the Cardinals in the media. There's always a lot of hype and a lot of headlines and talk about these various players they're going to go after or they're in on and things. And then usually nothing comes of it. So I really don't feel like the Cardinals are one player away from being a really good team. I mean, yeah, it would have been nice if they could have gotten really the only pitcher in there that they may have been in on, may have, quote unquote, was Greinke, who I think would really make a difference. The other guys they were talking about, yeah, it'd be nice to have them, but I don't think they would have drastically changed their situation.
Yeah, what we don't know, and we talked about it yesterday, and it would be fascinating to know behind closed doors. I said if we had the Nixon tapes and we could go back and listen, if they looked around and said, "Yeah, we're not that good anyway. Why?"
Yeah,
we don't really think they can never admit that, but behind closed doors they say, "I don't know. We're not going to win it all anyway."
Yeah, well, people say, well, we don't have a fifth starter. Well, you really don't have a great 3, 4, or 5, you know, or maybe even 2. So it's not like they were one pitcher away from, being a top-notch team. And I'm not just talking about making the postseason. I mean, who are they going to beat in the postseason? Are they going to beat the Dodgers?
I think they could beat the Braves. I think they could beat the... Well, I was going to say
they
the Nationals,
beat somebody
maybe
else
not.
In their division.
But you don't know. We don't know. I mean, what if they got in and Fowler hit 3 homers in a short series? I mean, you don't know.
Well, I could be an astronaut, too.
Right.
You don't know. But
in sports, there's a lot of history there where...
No, you're right.
I mean, the
Anything
Cardinals...
can happen.
Like, even beating the Phillies in 2011, you did have Albert Pujols, you did have Chris Carpenter, but they were heavily considered heavy underdogs.
Let's just say, Dan, this... Jack Flaherty, it's not an aberration, it's a trend, and this mega-talented pitcher is going to be lights out. All you need is 2 pitchers really great in the postseason. And
that's true.
So
that's true. That's a good point. And really, the Flaherty that pitched yesterday was the Flaherty that everybody thought they were going to have this year. That, to me, that's been the biggest disappointment for the Cardinals is their starting pitching is just, it hasn't been nearly as good as people were projecting.
Well, and it's sort of been this attrition where, so Carlos Martinez either got hurt or didn't rehab. Or it's kind of a mystery what happened to him. He falls into the closer's role. Alex Reyes is now this enigma that can't stay healthy. So all these exciting pieces have sort of slowly fallen off. It's down to, in terms of the young guns, it's down to Flaherty and Hudson. And if they can kind of get on some kind of Glavine-Smoltz train here, that would be great. But if they don't, you probably have no chance.
Yeah, I agree. And they could. I mean, they're young guys, and maybe it took half a season for it to kick in. I don't know. I mean, I thought both of those guys were going to be really good this year and or this season. And it just they've been inconsistent. I mean, Flaherty, without a doubt. You know, and it might help if the manager lets him pitch more than 3.5 innings or something.
Yeah.
Although the quick hook is in vogue, and there are times when I like it because they used to be married to got to get him 5 innings, got to get him that win. So I don't mind it in those situations where it's time to get him out. But with this depleted bullpen now, you might have to push a guy a little longer.
Well, that's the other side of it is you it's okay to manage that way. And I'm not – you're right. It is the trend in baseball. But you just put an awful lot of pressure on the rest of your pitching staff when you do it that way. And I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, and they were asking me about – we were talking about Flaherty and you know, they really thought he was going to be a Bob Gibson type pitcher or something. Well, in today's baseball, nobody's going to be a Bob Gibson again because they don't get the chance to become a Bob Gibson. As soon as they get in trouble in the third or fourth inning, they come out. They don't get a chance to learn how to get out of trouble. You have all these stats now that show that, well, the third time around, you know, they're not as good as they were the first two times around. So, you know, time to get them out of there. Well, it used to be the line on good pitchers was that if you didn't get them early, you weren't going to get them at all. Now it's the opposite.
You can't get them early. You'll probably get them later.
Right.
It is like helicopter managing. Poor little Johnny.
Absolutely.
Can't get anybody out in the sixth or seventh. Somebody ran a clip the other day of Bob Gibson at his Hall of Fame speech, and he thanked Red Shandies, and he said, you know, he would leave me in there in the seventh. He said, he's the reason I have 254 wins or whatever his final number was. And then he said, he's probably also the reason I have 172 losses, because he was saying like he just left him out there forever.
Well, here's a great stat from 68. You know, his 1.12 ERA season was Gibson was never taken out of a game from the pitching mound during that entire season. The only time he came out of a game was when he was pinch hit for.
Wow.
They never
I wonder if that's
quote,
ever happened to anybody else.
I don't
that's
know.
Insane.
Yeah, it's true, though.
Wow. Is that in your book?
It's not in this book. This book's about the 80s.
Yeah.
Although there is Bob Gibson's Hall of Fame induction. There's a story about it in there. I'm not sure if I put that stat in there or not.
So that 80s team, and we've discussed this before, Martin and I, the early 80s team when Hernandez and Herr and Ozzy and Obie, could there be any other team defensively?
Well, most Whitey would tell you that the 85 team was.
That was Jack
better.
Clark, though, at first, right. Defensively.
Yeah, but it was Terry Pendleton at third.
That's a little better than Oberfell, but still.
Well, Oberfell was really good.
Yeah. Pendleton won a
Pendleton
gold glove.
Pendleton was probably a little more athletic.
I want to say yes.
I don't think Pendleton ever did win a gold glove.
Won an MVP, right?
But if you have the greatest defensive first baseman, arguably of all time, and the greatest shortstop defensively, arguably of all time, on the same infield.
Right.
I think that would be better
than
85.
Yeah, I've always felt that way. Yeah. I don't disagree with you, but, you know, and their catching was different in 85. So, I don't know. I've always felt, I agree
three,
with you.
Three gold gloves.
I thought they were 82. Pendleton won three.
Won three. I think one here and then
two in Atlanta.
No, two here and one in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He won an
the
MVP,
amazing
didn't
thing
he?
Was he won an MVP, yeah. And he was, I think, second one other year. For the MVP.
Yeah, the next year. So when he wins the MVP with the Braves in 91, the next year he was runner-up MVP.
The biggest travesty, though, was 87 when Ozzie Smith was second to Andre Dawson, whose Cubs finished last.
And Andre hit 50, though, right?
Yeah, he had outrageous power numbers, but his team finished last. And Ozzie had an unbelievable year, not to say anything about what he meant to them defensively. And he finished second, and Jack Clark finished third.
Wow. Dan, split the vote a little, I guess.
And the book is anecdotes about moments, seasons, players?
Yeah, you know, it's. I think really that's one of the highlights of the book. I mean, there's lots of great pictures that probably people in St. Louis haven't seen before, because there's only one picture from the Post-Dispatch in the entire book. But the highlight really is I got a hold of a lot of those guys we were just talking about and got little anecdotes from them. And sometimes they're tied to an event, an episode in the book. And the book's about 150 episodes that I thought were the top stories of the decade. So some of these anecdotes or stories are tied to a particular event, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're something completely different. But, I mean, we were just talking about Terry Pendleton, and September 11th, 87, he hit one of the biggest home runs in Cardinals history. They were starting a big series with the Mets in New York. They had just lost Clark in the previous series with Montreal, where he suffered the high ankle sprain, so he was out for the rest of the season. They start the series in New York a game and a half ahead of the Mets, and they're losing 4-2 in the ninth inning, down to their last out. Terry Pendleton, the previous at-bat is in the on-deck circle, and there's some Mets fans. They're in New York. Group of guys are abusing him. Guy throws a program, hits him in the back with it, and yells, "And tomorrow we're going to kick your butt again, and we'll be a half game out. Or no, we'll be in first place," or something like that. So Pendleton comes up. He's the last guy. They're down to the last out. Runner on base. Boom, hits the home run off of Roger McDowell. So that was his response to the abuse he took in the on-deck circle.
And, was
and then they
the
won
call?
The game in extra innings. Then they beat Doc Gooden the next day, and they left town with a 3.5-game lead.
What about the stolen base totals? What was the high in 85 or 87? Did they go?
In 85, they stole 314 bases.
Is that still a major league record? Or
it's got to be. No, Montreal actually had the
you mean the Reigns, Dawson, Valentine?
Yeah. But it was just for comparison. Last year, I think the Cardinals stole 62 bases. And they haven't stolen as many as 100 since 2004. So 314 steals. There's just to demonstrate or illustrate how different the game was, is during Whitey's era, which started in 80 and ended in 90. They hit fewer than 100 home runs 9 times in those 10 years. Huh. They stole more than 200 bases 7 consecutive seasons, including the 314 in 85. And, of course, you know, they had Vince Coleman, who stole over 100 bases in his first 3 seasons with the Cardinals. And it's just the baseball was in play. And there's just a lot more going on.
Yeah, you had Herr who could run, Oz who could run, Pendleton who could run, Coleman who could run, McGee who could run. That's 5. And then in right field.
Well, they had all the switch hitters, too.
Yeah.
You know, Herr, Pendleton, Ozzy, Willie McGee in center. All those guys were switch hitters. It's just a different. Like I said, they had fewer than 100 home runs from 81 through 90. Last year, I think they hit 262 home runs or something like that.
And home runs were always, you know, the big moment, the exciting moment, and there was a certain, I don't know, there was like a pizzazz to it. And now, it's so overdone. And when Mike Schilt was talking about the things that his team did well, and then he said, "Hey, I thought you guys liked Whitey Ball," I think that one we're like, whoa, Whitey Ball.
Yeah.
Is not clock and home run. The game has changed so much. It's not so much about the Cardinals, but the game is different. You think Whitey Ball, you're thinking of jackrabbits running all around the field. That comparison fell short.
Well, another episode in the book is the day at Wrigley Field where they stole 4 bases on 1 pitch. They had Vince Coleman on second, Willie McGee on first, Scott Sanderson's pitching for the Cubs. Makes a pitch, Coleman steals third. McGee's stealing second behind him. He slides past the base. Maybe you guys remember this. Yeah. Slides past the base. Ron Say's playing third. Coleman jumps up, gets in a rundown, heads for the plate. They throw the ball to Jody Davis. He throws the ball back to, runs him back toward third, throws the ball to Say. Coleman stays in a rundown, turns around, runs home. The pitcher didn't cover home plate. There's nobody covering home plate, so he steals home. Meanwhile, McGee is sliding into third.
That's a week's worth for some teams now.
Yeah. It was, they were really exciting to watch. Not that every day was like that, but there was a lot going on when you went to a Cardinal game.
What was weird about the 80s is that, and I think we've talked about it, but you'd have those great years, and then the next year they'd be terrible. And you have a great year, the fall off in like 83, 84, 86 were just bad teams, or, I don't remember the injuries, but they were great, and then they were bad. And then they were great, and then they were bad.
Yeah, the Clark injuries were huge. He was injured a couple times. But it's funny you say that because, I one of the stories in the book, a couple of them are from Dal Maxville, and Maxie told me that exact thing, is that always drove him crazy. In fact, he would talk to other baseball people and other GMs, even after he left, trying to figure out why it was that they were in that pattern. Right. It's like every other year they were really good. But, the 80s, they had the best record in the National League for the decade. They went to Game 7 of the World Series three times. They should have gone to the postseason 81 when they got screwed because of the split season. They had the best record in the division and didn't go to the postseason. And then in 89, they were right in it. In September, they went to Chicago. Pete Guerrero hit a big home run. They came back and won that game. But they lost Worrell to an injury in the series right before that. And then the next day they had a lead late in the game, and they had to use Dan Quisenberry, and they lost the game. And then they went into a six-game losing streak and fell out of it. But, in 89 they were right in there too. So five times out of 10 years they were chasing a pennant.
And how do you remember the Whitey Herzog exodus?
Well, what I remember most about it is they had 10 guys on the roster at that time who were in the last year of their contracts. And it was a process that really had started in 88 when they lost Clark. Became a free agent, signed elsewhere. They traded Tommy Herr. He was in the last year of his contract, traded him for Brunansky. In August of that year, they traded John Tudor for Pete Guerrero. All three of those guys were in the final year of their contract. Well, by 90, he had 10 more guys like that, including Terry Pendleton, Ozzy, Vince Coleman. And those guys knew they weren't going to be back. So they just weren't – the commitment and the desire wasn't there because they knew they were just playing out the string. And Whitey actually tried to resign about 6 weeks earlier, and they talked him out of it, and then he just couldn't take it anymore. But, he told me they had a series in San Francisco where they played really bad. And they had a couple of bad plays, and he's, the seventh or eighth inning, he looks down the end of the dugout, and three or four guys are laughing and joking around. And that, he just decided then, I just can't do this
anymore.
Wasn't
there a Division II between, maybe the Ozzy faction and then maybe a Jack Clark faction?
Well, that was a rumor. That had to do with, the guys joking around at the end of the dugout. Really, a much more important factor was the fact that Gussie Bush was no longer involved and August was the one pulling the strings. And he just...
He didn't live and die it.
Yeah, August couldn't stand the idea that a baseball player could have a better contract than he did, so that he wouldn't sign guys to a lucrative... I'll give you another example. When they lost Bruce Sutter in 84... They're going back and forth. Atlanta makes him a great offer. He comes into Whitey's office and he says, "Look, I don't want to leave. Can't we come to some kind of agreement?" He says, "Look, here's all you have to do is give me 12 teams, no trade, and I'll sign with you guys." And Whitey says, and he tells him, "You can name them 12 teams." So Whitey, told me 12 teams. Off the top of my head, I could name 12 teams that either can't afford them or don't need them. So he goes to August, and Fred Kuhlman or whatever, and says, "Here's the deal. He's ready to sign with us. He wants 12 no-trade teams. We can name them." So, that's the deal. And August says, "No, we're not going to do that. He hasn't earned that. He hasn't earned that no trade stuff." So
Yeah.
He went back and told them, no, they won't do it, and he signed with Atlanta.
Ironically, it kind of worked out that he didn't resign. Because his
massive deal.
He never did anything with Atlanta.
Yeah.
He retired in 1988, and he still gets $1.9 million a year through 2021 on that contract.
How does that make sense? Who cut that deal?
So, you know, people...
Ted Turner.
People give him credit for the great pitch, the great split finger pitch, but he had an even better financial advice.
Right. That's right. Good point.
You know what's amazing about Whitey, and he's about 86, 87 right now, the baseball memory of the details, too. I'm like, in 57, I went over to Chattanooga for a weekend. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, and you might forget where you parked your car, but the details, we were out in San Francisco, and I pinch hit for Hernandez. And you're like, oh, my, it's... All of these guys, Shane Deans, when he got older, he was still like that. La Russa is 74. He's got details on everything he did over the last 40 years. These baseball guys and their memory.
Well, and Whitey's like that with everything, not just baseball. Yeah. You know, he's a huge college basketball fan.
Yeah.
But I had lunch with Whitey for about 3 hours. One day talking about the book. I don't think I even asked a question. I just, okay, let's go. And, you know, instant offense. But... The stories he can tell you are just, you know, like we just went through the trading deadline. And I remember, I don't know, well, Frank grew up in, you grew up in St. Louis. All you guys did maybe. But, you know, the Keith Hernandez trade was like one of those, it was almost like the Kennedy assassination for me. I'll always remember where I was, exactly what I was doing when I found out they traded Keith Hernandez. But just as a contrast, the way they announced that, that happened late on a Wednesday afternoon. They're playing, I think, the Phillies that night at Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
And the way that people found out about that was they put it up on the video board at the ballpark. And then they got a rousing standing boo ovation when people read that on the scoreboard. But
and
know,
Whitey bit his lip and never really told the reason.
Well, and, you know,
before
people,
there was Twitter, people there was the Jumbotron.
People have always thought, it was strictly about drugs. It wasn't strictly about drugs. Because when Whitey got here in 80, the Cardinals' biggest problem, or one of their problems, was they had all these really good hitters, but they were slow. You know, they had Simmons and I'm trying to think of some of their
Ron
other...
Ron Fairley, maybe, or who else?
I don't know. But, you know, they had, I think, 400-300 hitters that season. But as he would say, you know, they'd have to hit four singles to score a run. And the other part of the problem was is they're a very lethargic team that wasn't hustling. And that's the part that he was trying to get rid of. When he rebuilt the team, it was about speed and defense, but it was also about getting rid of some of these guys who just weren't hustling. Hernandez, he felt, was one of those guys.
Oh, yeah. He'd be smoking in the dugout before the game, clubhouse.
Out.
If he grounded
to second base, he didn't run down to first base and run hard, I should say. And so it wasn't just completely about drugs, although his brother was dealing drugs to Major League Baseball players.
Minor issue.
Yeah.
I could see Whitey and Hernandez with their brains and their stubbornness really butting heads. You could picture that.
Yeah, I think from the get-go, that was a struggle between those two. Although, I mean, Hernandez was a great player when he was hustling. And, you know, if he hit the ball in the gap, he hustled and things like that. But, you know, he had in the 82 World Series, he had a crazy World Series. He started the World Series 0 for the first four games. And then he drove in 8 runs over the last 3 games.
Wow.
And all right, we got a break. Bob McClure, the lefty reliever for the Brewers, they were high school teammates. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
You end up in the World Series, and one of the guys on the other side was a high school. How random is that?
Dan O'Neill is with us. We'll take a break. McBride Homes, Missouri's largest home builder, is offering incredible deals through the entire month of August during the end of the season summer sale. Buy a new McBride home in August. Receive $2,000 to $10,000 off the base price of a new home. Celebrate the end of the summer season with incredible savings on a new McBride home, fit for every lifestyle, designed with you in mind. McBride has over 40 communities throughout the metro St. Louis area and over 100 inventory homes ready for a quick move-in. Visit McBrideHomes.com for details. When we come back, if you thought the NFL, if you hated the NFL before this program, you're going to hate it worse after you hear this story.